This happened to me when I was in fourth grade. I am now 42. The internet as we know it wasn't around back in those days. So unfortunately, I don't have any news articles to corroborate my story. But I have a very vivid memory of what happened that day. The day that my friend nearly lost her innocence and possibly her life. Here is the backstory. I have always had this very weird habit that I still do to this very day. I don't know what causes it, but I've always walked on my tiptoes. When I would go to school, I would usually get picked on a lot for this. No matter how much I tried walking flat-footed, I always ended up back on my toes. This led my family to believe that I was destined to be a ballet dancer. As much as I loved to dance, I was also a tomboy that preferred climbing trees to wearing dresses. So when my mother, who worked two jobs, took me to the community center and signed me up for ballet classes, I thought I would definitely have to learn how to like dresses. The dance instructor's name was Melanie. She was impressed by my skills but wasn't crazy about my height or my parents' economic status, as this was a very expensive class. At the end of my audition, I was told that I was too tall and awkward. It was a nice way of building up a young girl's confidence. When I exited the classroom and entered the hallway, I heard Melanie say under her breath that she would not teach poor kids. I stopped mid-stride and turned around. "Excuse me?" And that's when she replied, "I don't teach trailer trash, okay?" My face became so red that my ears were purple. At that moment, I decided that I would knock her on her pompous ass. Before I could react, that's when I felt a hand on my shoulder, followed by a man's voice. "That's a fighter in you. Have you ever thought about trying out karate?" Mr. Diaz was a well-known and respected karate instructor in our county. He wanted me to try out his class and even offered to take me in at no charge. I would be his first girl, but he saw my potential, and I still owe him a lot for this. When I first started training, he noticed my tiptoed footing, and rather than mock me for it, he showed me how to turn them into weapons, as my legs are, to this day, still solid muscle from my calves to my thighs, and I kick harder than a mule. It was around this time that our small town on the coast of North Carolina was being terrorized by a man who had been abducting young girls. He would take them, have his way with them, and when he was done, he would bind their hands together, blindfold them before crossing into another town and dropping them off in the middle of the night. He was a sick bastard. He didn't kill any of his victims, but his MO suggested that he was becoming more and more violent with each incident. Mr. Diaz changed his lessons for a week or two and taught us how to use our momentum against attackers to get away. Eyes, nose, groin, and face. He said that if you were attacked, we should try our best to claw and scratch their face and eyes. Not only would this have the chance of blinding them, but it would also make them easy to identify after the fact. More importantly, he emphasized the buddy system. He told us not to scream the R word, because unfortunately, while many people want to stop that from happening, he also said people don't want to see it and carry that mental image around in their heads. We should scream, "Fire," or "I lost my arm." He said that as silly as the last one sounds, it works. People are compelled to look at a fire, but even more so if someone's arm is falling off. Okay, so now on to the day in question. I was in fourth grade, and the year was 1990, springtime. At the time, I was with my best friend, who we'll call Jenny. Jenny and I decided to take a little walk around the neighborhood we lived in. This neighborhood had two main entrances and formed a circle with two parallel streets in the middle. Homes were lined along each road, no more than 1.5 acres apart, some even closer. It was very easy to come into one entrance, leave out the other, and not be seen by anyone, even if you were paying attention to the vehicles that were passing through. This was also back when we kept the time by looking at the streetlights. The rule was when the streetlights come on, Your ass better be on your way home. Ginny and I were on the main road heading towards the back. We were just being a couple of young girls talking about boys that we liked and the boogeymen that had been terrorizing our state. A girl that we knew named Kelly had been the latest victim. She was turned from a social butterfly into a psych ward regular. She even tried to take her own life at one point. As we were talking about this, I remember looking over my shoulder and seeing an unfamiliar car approaching us very slowly. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. The car was a Pontiac with a faded maroon or burgundy color. The driver almost reminded me of Jeffrey Dahmer. He wore these thick, red-rimmed glasses, had tight blonde curly hair, and had a smile that made my skin crawl. His window was down already, and he stopped the car beside us.
"Hello, girls. I'm trying to pay my electric bill, and I can't seem to find the office anywhere. Can you tell me how to get there from here?"
Coincidentally, the one electric company in our town wasn't even a mile away from our neighborhood. In fact, I could have walked straight through the woods and shown up at the front doorstep. The only way to pay to turn on the service was in the office itself. Again, this was a small town back in the early 90s. The driver continued, saying that he had to get there to avoid his electricity shutting off. Knowing that he had had to have been there before, I stated, "It's where you paid to have it turned on, so just go there." That's when I noticed an open map beside him on the passenger seat. He explained that his mother had been the one to turn on the electricity, and he was new to the area, and had just come back from deployment. Something that struck me as odd was that his hair was a bit too long for being in the military, and he didn't have a sticker for getting on base. There are two military bases by us, Camp Lejeune and Cherry Point. Both of my grandfathers served in the military.
Can you please just show me it here on the map?"
He beckoned Ginny over to his car. Ginny was obviously unaware that something was off. I looked around and saw that no one was outside, and I quickly turned my attention back to Ginny and the man. The voice of Mr. Diaz echoed in my head. "Fight if you can't fly. Something bad will happen to Ginny if you don't." As soon as Ginny gets close enough, a look of pure evil forms on the man's face. Imagine seeing a human transforming into a demonic creature. That's the best way I can describe it.
"Thanks, sweetie. Just point it out for me right here."
He locks eyes with mine and gives me a sickly smile. That's when I quickly grab Ginny.
"Wait, don't lean in."
Jenny's scream echoed across the street. As I look up and saw that the man had reached over the passenger seat and had a hold of her arm. The car slowly began to roll forward as he struggled to pull her in. I yelled as I wrapped my arms around Jenny's upper body. I then pulled back as hard as I could, and I knew it was going to hurt like a bitch once I fell onto the asphalt, but that was okay, as long as I still had a hold of Ginny. We both hit the road, and it hurt like hell, as I predicted. By this time, some of the neighbors heard us screaming, and had exited their homes. I pulled Ginny to safety as the car peeled away. One of the bystanders was the mother of my friend Brandon. She got the tags, and a detailed description of what the driver looked like and his car. The man that we encountered that day was the monster who had been preying on young girls in North Carolina. I don't recall his name. My mother made every effort to keep me sheltered before this incident, and it just got worse after this. Now that I'm a mother myself, I can understand better now. She was proud of me and my actions that day. Ginny was also very grateful, and I'm glad to say that she's still doing well. The girl that I mentioned earlier, Kelly, serves as an example of what could have become of her if I hadn't intervened that day. Kelly has had a rough life and doesn't really speak to anyone anymore. I don't know all the details, but the monster ended up being caged. The descriptions of the car and the driver gathered from my neighborhood aided in his apprehension. I often think back to that day at the community center, where I was scoffed at by someone who thought I wasn't worth the investment. But against all odds, Mr. Diaz saw the potential in a tall, awkward girl who walked on her tiptoes. He was the guiding voice in my head that day, and if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been able to save Jenny. This took place when I was only 7 years old. Back then, my parents would always drop me off at my grandma's house on the weekends. I always looked forward to staying with her. We would always go for walks around the neighborhood and talk to the people that she knew. My grandmother was always a very religious person, and we went to church with many of the people in her neighborhood. It was a very friendly community. They would often host garage sales on the weekends during the warmer months, which usually had decent turnouts. On one weekend, my parents decided to go to one of the garage sales with us. I was super excited. We usually just liked to look around and rarely would buy anything. Eventually, we got to a house that had boxes of toys lined all the way down the driveway. The sale was happening at a house that we had never been to before, and we didn't know who lived there. Once I saw all the toys, I thought I had just won the lottery. While I was busy sorting through the newly discovered treasure, my grandma and parents were a few yards away looking at some dishes and furniture and making conversation with some of the other people there. An older man, who looked to be around 60, approached me and watched me sort through the boxes with a smile on his face.
"My, what a pretty young woman you are. Do you like toys?"
I eagerly said yes, not thinking anything of it. I was about to leave to go ask my mom if I could buy a toy horse that I found. But before I could go, he said that he would let me have it for free and gave it to me with a grin on his face. He started picking a few other toys out of the boxes and handing them over to me, insisting that I could have all the toys I wanted. He told me that he had way more toys inside of his house that I could play with as well, and that I should go with him. Before I knew it, I was being led into his house. My mom then came up behind me and pulled me away from him, and then asked what the hell was going on. She was furious, holding me tightly and staring daggers at the man. She must have seen what was happening just in time and intervened. My dad and grandma were right behind her. The man said nothing while my mom and grandma started screaming at him. This caught the attention of every other bystander, and everyone was immediately suspicious. I don't remember what was said, because my dad scooped me up in his arms and took me back to the car. I remember my grandma calling the police before we left. I didn't understand the gravity of the situation at the time. I found out many years later that the man had gone to the same church as my grandma and had participated in a lot of the events hosted by the church, including the youth events. Apparently, the police found loads of child pornography on his computer and was sent to prison shortly after. I'm 19 now, and it still creeps me out thinking about what could have happened to me if my mother didn't see what was going on. Thank God she did. Back in 2001, I worked for a major home improvement warehouse. Let's just say the company I worked for had a thing for the color orange. By then, I had been with the company for about 8 years. My previous position was with HR, an assistant to the regional and store managers. The company eliminated that position, so I asked to be transferred to the RTV department, which stands for Return to Vendor. The girl who was working in that position gave her 2 weeks' notice, so the timing was perfect. The job was to work with the different vendors to get credit back to the store for defective merchandise. our company had a pretty liberal return policy back in 2001, and some people brought back some strange things like garbage disposal units infested with maggots, old plug-in drills that weren't even being manufactured, you could always tell by the serial numbers, defective lawnmowers, and half-put-together shelves. I've seen it all. My RTV cage, as they called it, was located in the receiving department at the back of the store. It was a 12-foot-high chain-link fence with a swinging door entrance, which I would lock when I would go on lunch break or checked out for the day. I had my computer up on a makeshift stand, where I would process the credits and have vendors sign off on them. You wouldn't be able to see into the cage from outside, due to all the bins holding the defective merchandise. One day, a vendor came in for some defective molding. I was standing at my computer with my back towards the guy as he inspected the merchandise, both the product and mine, apparently. He then told me, "I'll give you credit for everything here." I was about to turn around and say, "Awesome, thanks," but was surprised with a flesh-colored, wrinkled, phallic-shaped hardware hanging out of his zipper. And he just stood there with his hands on his hips, so that I knew it didn't just fall out. I turned around back to my computer, and I felt faint. I thought, did that just happen? Without turning back around, I handed him the RTV paper to sign, and he said, "See you in a couple weeks." I took some time in the cage to compose myself, and then walked to the manager's office and informed him about the situation. I also called the MOD, they like their acronyms, and his reply was,
"Well, what do you expect?"
And then started laughing. Since this was 20 years ago, I'll go ahead and say that I was pretty cute back then. Tan, fit, always had my hair and makeup done. No matter what I looked like, I didn't expect that from someone I had to do business with. The MOD insinuated that I should expect and accept treatment like that from time to time, and they weren't going to do anything about it. I called the company that the hot dog flasher worked for, and they said,
We'll look into it.
Fast forward a few weeks later, and a coworker approached me and asked, "Did you hear? That molding dude did the same thing to a cashier. Now he can't come back into the store anymore." So, that son of a bitch didn't get fired? Apparently not. Looking back on this whole thing, I should have sued them. I'd probably be rich by now. Maybe I should have just laughed and said, "That's all you've got? I've seen bigger ones on newborn babies." But hindsight is always 20/20. In the moment, I froze, because that was the last thing I ever expected to happen.
This happened in late October of last year in Ottawa, Ontario. I was visiting my old city to see my parents, which is always a strenuous endeavor. So I generally try to be in their house as little as possible when I'm over. To kill some boredom one night, I decided to go for a jog around the neighborhood I grew up in, around 10:30 p.m. I was really pushing myself as I quit drinking and was desperately trying to burn off the excess belly fat from being drunk and lazy during lockdown. I ran basically a huge circuit around the neighborhood, taking me through three parks. The third park I had to run through has no streetlights. It has one right in the middle. But Ottawa has a thing where random lights shut off, and this alternates across the city's power grid to save money and electricity. 9 times out of 10, it isn't shining. Now, this park is extremely dark, especially on a quiet October night with clear skies and dry ground. The road leading into it is well illuminated. This is a quaint, quiet, peaceful suburb. There has been some sketchy stuff that has happened in this little suburb, though. For example, just a 6-minute walk from my parents' house was one of the biggest drug busts our city has ever seen. some gang with automatic illegal weapons, the whole shebang. There were also a couple of stabbings in other areas, but very spaced apart and generally resolved by the law immediately. All in all, it's a very quaint, safe, and clean place to raise a family. If I ever have kids or retire, Kanata would be an ample place to do it. I have never once felt unsafe, especially in the neighborhood my parents lived in, as it's full of some very nice houses. Through the darkness, I entered the park and passed through the first part of it, which is a play structure meant for little kids. Pretty much just a wooden mini house that's next to a bouncy spring. This leads to a bigger part of the park with a basketball court, jungle gym, and a much larger play structure with a big, green triceratops made of plastic in the sandbox. All this eventually leads to a path that runs behind my old elementary school. At the end of this path is my street. I almost finished my run, running through the dark, spooky park, as I have passed through hundreds of times before. Now, I got into the habit of falling asleep to creepy stories and have been watching a lot of horror movies lately. As I'm breaking into the blackness from the adjacent street, leading into the park, I am on the fence about taking a break and walking, but I remember I was trying to push myself. I carry on as I think, jokingly to myself. Gee, I sure hope nothing spooky happens. But as I am rounding the corner to the other half of the park, I heard a distant scraping sound. I noticed a light from somebody's cell phone shining in the sandbox. As I ran closer, I heard this scraping getting louder. I got even closer, and I noticed through the moonlight that it is a man holding one of those hard rakes with the sharp tines, grooming the sandbox. Now, some internal intuition told me that I know this is super weird. Why is there some guy grooming the sandbox at almost 11 p.m. with a flashlight? As I approach further, however, I notice it isn't just a man holding a sharp rake. It's a man wearing an all-black sweatsuit with the hood up and a white hospital mask. He is standing underneath the play structure, using the tines of the rake to push a pink horse with wheels on it back and forth, and so on and so forth. He heard the stride of my footsteps approaching, and his head jerked upright in my direction. He quickly moved out from underneath the play structure and shined the light on me, right into my eyes. "This is really weird," I thought to myself as I flashed him an utterly exhausted, awkward wave. I have asthma, and my quads and lungs are giving out. I try super hard to up the pace, because I am fairly creeped out at this point. In a flash, he kills his light, and I cannot see a single thing anymore. My heart jumps into my throat, and I am very tuckered out at this point, ready to collapse. I heard a soft shuffling in the sand as I passed him, followed by rapid footsteps in between my strides getting closer and louder. Instantaneously, it clicks that this guy is charging me with the rake. It's crazy what fear and adrenaline can do, because I went from 0 to 100 real quick, sprinting faster than I would be able to normally. My whole body is burning, especially my lungs, as I cleared the park onto the well-lit path. I was moving so fast and panting so loud, I couldn't even tell if he was following me or not. I didn't look back. I cleared the end of the path and saw some guy getting out of his car. With him as my witness, I turned around, panting myself to death and wheezing. He was gone. I walked back to my street and went into my house, hacking up disgusting amounts of phlegm, absolutely drenched in sweat. I avoided telling my parents this story at first, just to avoid their reaction, but everyone else in my life knew pretty quick. I don't care for police, so calling them wasn't even something that crossed my mind. Later, when I reconnected with an old friend, one who never left Ottawa, she informed me that my old elementary school converts to a homeless shelter at night. They set up cots in the gymnasium and kick them out at 6 a.m. Her reaction was to rationalize that it was probably a mentally ill, homeless person who was bored and couldn't sleep. But what if he had a different intention? Was he waiting for a jogger to pass by? Was he trying to scare people just for the fun of it? Or was he really in a violent mood? I guess I will never know.
So this happened yesterday, and I'm still pretty shaken up. Just for some backstory, I'm a 25-year-old female, and my boyfriend and I both have jobs where we can work from home and in an office. I was extremely tired yesterday morning, so I decided to work from home as my boyfriend went into the office. So I was alone all day with just my dog and cat at home with me. The day was normal as any other workday from home that I've taken until about 1:30 p.m. This is where things took a turn. I had just hopped into a work meeting when my doorbell rang. We have one of those Ring doorbells with a camera, and it notifies my boyfriend's phone that someone's at the door. I texted my boyfriend, and I asked if he could check who it was, and he said it was an older man who looked kind of sketchy and did not answer the door. So I ignore the door and go back to my meeting. 20 minutes later, I'm done with my meeting, and I decided to check my phone. I always keep my phone on Do Not Disturb while I'm working, and as soon as I checked it, I noticed all of the calls and texts that I'd missed from my boyfriend. Panicked, I immediately called him back, and he frantically asked me why I haven't been answering. I told him I was in a work meeting, and he tells me to look out the window, as the man hasn't left our property yet. I very quietly walk over to the front windows of our house and peek out, and sure enough, the man's in our driveway. He had parked his old beat-up truck next to our car in our driveway, and he was looking back and forth very sketchily. He had on dirty jeans and a dirty gray tank top. I immediately run back to our bedroom, and at this point, my heart is pounding in my chest. I tried to comfort myself by just saying that maybe he had the wrong house, but no. The man began looking through our windows trying to see inside, and he proceeded to try and open our back gate, which was locked. As I mentioned earlier, I have a large dog, and at this point, my dog is snapping and growling at the front door. As I still had my boyfriend on the phone, and he was actively watching the man on the camera app on his phone, I asked him what I should do since I was in full panic mode and completely alone. "Call 911," he firmly said. I did as he said, and with shaky hands, I called. While I waited for the police to arrive, I texted my mom to let her know of the situation, and she immediately dropped what she was doing and said she was on her way. The man was still snooping around the house and looking through our windows. At this point, I had no idea what his intentions were, but by the looks of it, they didn't seem good, and I was really afraid he would see me. As soon as the man saw the police coming down the road, he hopped in his truck and sped off. I ran outside to the officer, and at this point, my mom had arrived as well. In tears, I explained what happened, and thankfully my mom got the man's license plate number. The police took his license plate number as well as description, and they told me they'd be on lookout for him. I know this may not seem as scary as some of the other stories here, but when you're alone, and there's a man looking through your windows and not leaving your property, you have no idea what his intentions are, and it's absolutely terrifying. I wasn't able to sleep last night because I was so terrified, thinking he would come back to try and finish what he started. I'm hoping the police call me with an update since we had the license plate number, and if they do, I will provide an update. And to the strange man who wouldn't leave my property, please don't come back again.